But if they don't do it, don't do it.
Right, right. It's, okay.
So basically, Moshe did not make any mistakes in transmission from his nevuah from God with the whole Torah, right? So, okay. So, and I'm assuming that statement based on when Miriam and Aaron spoke Lashon Hara about him and said that he's like a different Nevi, right? He's not like
any
other Nevi, right? So how do we know that statement was not also based on, let's say, his emotions or his misunderstanding of the interpretation of God's Nevuah?
All right, raise the question again.
Yeah. Moshe didn't write the whole Torah based on his emotions or right. Misinterpretation of his Nevuah. So therefore, there could be no mistake in that he wrote it from God, for sure, from right. The whole Torah. So how do we know, and that's based on when Moshe Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about him, and he said...
Why is it based on that?
I'm assuming that's what I've...
I would say it's based on Vayimi Bar Hashem and Moshe Avdo, by Yamsuf. That Vayimi Bar Hashem, they believed in God, and they believed that Moshe is his trustworthy servant. So they Vayaminu doesn't mean believed, by the way. Vayaminu means that it was I think of an English word for it. Vayaminu means that it was proven to them. In other words, it was proven to their satisfaction. The yom of the Vrechem should be proven. So in other words, that they saw that Moshe Rabbeinu was really God's servant, and God trusts him, so to speak. So if God trusts him, so we wouldn't give over something to him which he would falsify.
How did they see that God trusted him?
I mean, Hashem Moshe Avda, because they saw through the Nisim in Yamsuf that Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that performed the Nisim, and it was done through God. So God trusted him. And besides the Nisim that were done in Mitzrayim, like the Ibn Ezra says, it couldn't be done by anybody. It had to be done only by a person at a certain high level of knowledge. So Moshe Rabbeinu was the one. It could only be done through Moshe Rabbeinu, those Nisim, because he had to have a knowledge of the Teva, of the nature, and a knowledge of God insofar as he exists before the Teva. And that's why he can control the Teva. So they saw that Moshe Rabbeinu has this high level of knowledge, and that God trusts him to perform the Nisim through him. So they saw that he's a trustworthy, high-level person.
Didn't Avinu do Nisim? Or
Aaron did the first three? Not like that.
Did Aaron do the first three?
Aaron? Yeah, but not the... those Nisim weren't the same on the same level. The ones that Moshe better did.
This is just such a big nais that changed the Teva, therefore
right.
You can trust him.
Right.
You can't trust him.
Well, that's what it means, by Amin Rashan Moshavdo, by the Yam Suf. Right. So then that was before Maimed Har Sinai. That preceded him. And Maimed Har Sinai also, the Gam B'Chai Aminu L'Olam. So they heard the voice, like the Rambam says, they heard the voice talking to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe, M.O.M. Kach B'Kach. And Maimed Har Sinai itself was the B.S.O.S.
Right. Well, I guess my question is more of being
And that was much later with Miriam. That was much later.
Right.
But the Pasuk says openly that Hakel Sam Rav Chumshe. But the Laman Yishmu Ambedabri Imach, the Gamba Chayaminu Laolam. So they heard the conveyance of the information from God to Moshe, and then they knew that he was really his trusted servant. So the Rambam Perek Ches says it, as the whole thing, right in the beginning of Perek Ches. But the Maimed Har Sinai was the one oath that they saw with their own eyes and heard with their own ears. That Moshe Rabbeinu was a trusted servant of God.
So, I guess my question is more of meaning he's human, he can make mistakes.
Yeah, but God wouldn't. There's a human that can make mistakes, and there's a human that won't make mistakes. And not every human has to make mistakes in every area. So to trust Moshe Rabbeinu to transmit the Torah the way he heard it, that everybody was clear that God trusts him. It would be it wouldn't make any sense for God to choose somebody, show everybody that he trusts him, and then know that this person is not going to give over the Torah properly. It wouldn't make any sense. So the fact that God chose him and God and we heard God talking to him and trusting him with it, so it only makes sense that God knows that he's going to transmit it properly. I mean, transmit it properly doesn't mean that there's no questions. We have endless questions. And we have endless shittas. And even in mitzvahs, there are so many different ways. Like that's why the Rambam said that if you want to do tefillin right, they asked him why he doesn't wear tefillin, Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. So if you want to do tefillin right, you got to do 64 ways. To multiply the shittas, cannot 64. But there we don't really. That's really the godless of Torah. That in our Torah we don't. And the idea is not to try to find a tefillin that Moshe Rabbeinu wore. The idea is to use your mind and learn the method of analysis and follow that method. That's what Rabbeinu Tam followed his method, Rashi followed his method, Ram followed his method. That is the Torah. The Torah is the creative product of the human mind who knows how to study it, who knows its methodology. That's what Torah is. That's the halacha. But Moshe has, in the beginning of the Sefer, he has something like that. Because how do you know when you're paskin, if you're paskin right or wrong? There's so many different questions, and it's based on so many sources from before. Answers you don't know. I mean, the Rambam writes about this big question in Tzvon. See, there's three parts to a cloth, to a parchment. There's the whole parchment, and they split it in half. One side is called Gvil. And one side is called the chsustis, and one side is called cloth. So tefillin you write on cloth, mezuzah you write on the chsustis. But there's a big machlokas, which is cloth and which is the chsustis. It seems the gvil is no problem. Gvil everybody holds is the whole hide taken together. Okay, and you write on the tzad aser, right on the outside. But then they take the gvil and they split it, and they have the chsustis is for tefillin. And the cloth is for the chsustis is for mezuzah and cloth is for tefillin. but the big machlok shoshana, which side is which? And the Rambam writes that he thought originally the wrong way, and he said the tefillin that he had years ago were all wrong. So what's going to do about it? So it wasn't kind of mitzvah tefillin all those years. Doesn't make him any less the Rambam. And he went according to his mind and according to his intellect, and that's it. That's what halacha is. Halacha is to go according to the best knowledge that you have. There's no magical formula that you're not trying to accomplish a magical rite. That if it's missing this ingredient, it's not going to do the trick. The mitzvah is according to your das. So the Rambam all those years was not Mekayim Mitzvah Tefillin. He realizes it now. But in fact, what he did all those years was really Mitzvah Tefillin. He has Schar Mitzvah Tefillin. Because he was following his mind that day. He thought at that time he thought that's what tefillin is.
So why wouldn't we, when people paskin nowadays, can they only paskin like within the parameters of people before? Like if it's all going based on their mind, then shouldn't they be able to determine stuff just like the people before did?
Let me say that again.
Like no one today could write a Mishnah Torah or something like that. Like we have a Masorah for them. So
no one can.
No one could write like a Mishnah Torah. Like,
okay. Well, there's no Masorah like that. There's no Masorah that says that you can't have a person bigger than the Rambam today. They can be. Mm-hmm. But we just don't have one. But there's no Masorah that says there can't be one.
So theoretically, people could just come up with new shittos in like major areas.
possible.
Okay. And what determines whether a person could do that or not?
Well, the Rosh says that if somebody comes up with an idea that goes against the Gaon, for instance, so he says that he has a right to do it, provided his idea is objectively recognized. In other words, he presents it to the Chachmei Ador, and they recognize that it's a legitimate, they don't have to agree with him, but they recognize that it's a legitimate point. He's not just imagining it. So if they recognize the legitimate point, then he can change that which was before. So the whole principle of Torah is to follow knowledge and to follow your mind. And the Masorah, really, the main part of the Masorah that we have is not so much in Halachos, which of course we have, but the main part is in the methodology of Torah Shabbat Peh. Of course, there are many machlekes. Machlekes whether chicken is meat, whether chicken is not meat. there's a lot of machlekes. A lot of machlekes. But the methodology is always the same. A lot of basic machlekes you have. But that doesn't detract from the fact that each one used the same methodology in arriving at the conclusion. And that's really what's important. That's what's important about Torah. Torah Shabbat Peh. That's why the Gemara says that the real krisis bris between us and God is in Torah Shabbat Peh. Because without Torah Shabbat Peh, you have nothing. Torah Shabbat Peh opens everything up, gives you a certain method and approach, and that's what's significant. And that's what we live by, and that's what we go by. Right, wrong, nobody, we can't know. Rashi writes in Chulin, he made a big mistake. He says, I made a big mistake, and I see that was wrong, and he's chazal. And the Rambam writes one of the tshuvas, he says, Chazal were always wrong. Many on every blot, you see, they made mistakes. They said they thought this, tifta, there's nothing, we don't know if there's anything wrong with making a mistake. That's not a flaw. Flaw is, if you know the truth, you don't follow it. But to make a mistake, there's no chazal. As a matter of fact, it's the greatness of a person to recognize that he made a mistake and to be honest about it. That's why my Rebbe, the Rav, was unusually honest. Somebody never tried to twist out of a kasha, even though it was one against him. Again, it was one against his position. He would admit that, no, that's wrong, it's a mistake.
Was the system originally supposed to exist with different shitas and machloksin? Because, like, isn't there a midrash that Yeshua forgot a bunch of halachos, like, after Moshe died?
Right.
So wouldn't that seem to indicate that you have, like, originally it was just supposed to be one system, but where would you have, like, all the, like, disagreements and the room for, like, the Torah Shabbat Peh method?
No, it's true, we lost a lot. But even when we had everything, there still was machloksin. You have the machlokas between the Moshe Rabbeinu and the Bnei Slavcha, whether a bas could be Yorish. So Moshe Rabbeinu said no. And Bnei Slavcha proved from Yibum that yes, it was all machlokas. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know who was right. So you see where there's always machlokas. Always, and that's what the Torah says, the Yidus Sanhedrin. Because, keep polem mocha davala mishpat. No matter how much Torah you're going to have, there are always new cases, there are always new theories, new ways to look at things. So you're always going to have machloks. Machloks is really part of the system. People look at it as a flaw in the system because they're looking for a certain religious security, that this is the way it is and there's no question about it. But Yadis doesn't preach that. Yadis preaches the opposite. That it's not possible to have that type of religious security. The only thing you can have is the security that you're following the way of God, which is to use your intelligence and your mind and arrive at conclusions that are logical, that are intelligent, and live by those conclusions. That's the real security. And that's the only security in life also. It parallels the security in life. There's no security in life that you're going to do the right thing, or that a person will get the right doctor, or that the person's health is not going to be impaired. There's no such security. The The only security a person has is to use his intelligence as best as he can. And even tefillah is a part of intelligence, because it says by Yaakov that he prepared himself for three things, for tefillah, for doron, and melchama. So he didn't count on tefillah, that tefillah is going to be the one that's going to save him. But it was rational to be mispal, maybe that medium will be effective. But if it's not, so then maybe he can appease him. If not, then he may have to go to war. So he had to prepare for all three things. And my son showed me in this week's parsha, in the same pasuk, when Yaakov was afraid to send Binyamin. So it says, V'keil shakai, yishlach lachem rachamim b'fnei o'ish. He should send you mercy before the man. You didn't know it was Yosef, but he didn't know it was Yosef. So, v'shilach lachem, etzachicham acher v'es Binyamin. And he should send you back your other brother, which was Shimon, and Binyamin. V'ani kasher shacholti shacholti. And I, just like I'm childless. So Rashi says, why do you say it twice? Because he's childless from Yosef, childless from Binyamin, and childless from Shimon. Well, he just was mispalo in the same pasuk, b'keil shakayit n'l'charach n'p'yitzim. So why should he feel that he's childless? So Rashi says, misafik. He says, till you come back, I won't know. So you see that he wasn't sure of his tefillah. He had no assurity in his tefillah. And the same thing by Avraham Avinu, by Eliezer. V'im lo sova isho l'lachas acharai. I saw a Bible commentator, that he thought that Avraham was secure in his tefillah, and that was a new era. But he didn't read the rest of the psukim, because the rest of the psukim says openly that v'im lo... So you see, even though he said that Hashem Elokeiv Osai that Yishlach Malcho Lefanecha V'Yasliach Lakecha, it was a tefillah, but he wasn't sure of it. Wasn't sure of the outcome. See, it's a very hard religion, because the religion is based on reality. In reality, we don't know. To say that a person knows what God will do would be tantamount to saying there is no God, because it would mean that his das is the das of the Creator. So that's an impossibility. So the only thing we have is that we know God is Shema Tefillah. Maybe. Is it worthwhile to misspell? Yes. But should a person feel that his tefillah is definitely going to change things? If he feels that way, there's something wrong. The Gemara says that a person that feels that way, what happens is in the end they become very depressed, because things don't work out the way they thought they sure would. Does tefillah not work? No, tefillah works. It works. It definitely works, but you have to have the right attitude towards it.
How exactly does it work?
that's a tough question. I mean, that's God's evaluation of the individual and his state, and whether it's the best thing for him. I mean, God has to decide that. A lot of factors go into that. The status of the individual, the sincerity of his tefillah, the thing he's being mispalled for, is it something that's good for him, or something, you may say, Mali Mishlasenu Torah. Because Mishlasenu sometimes are not too good. What does the world say? Be careful what you wish for. There's truth to that.
How do you know it works?
What?
How do you know it works?
How do you know how it works?
No, how do you know that it actually works?
The only way we know is through Nevuah. That through Nevuah we receive, Moshe Rabbeinu received in the Torah, that the Pasuk says that God listens to the tefillahs. What is the Pasuk? Pasuk in Vaschana. Omega Gadla Shalokim Krovim Elov, Kadashan Lachena Bachol Kar Eino Elov. So when we call to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he does answer. But we only know it through Nevuah. You can't know it through logic. That's not possible. That's why logically you say, like Einstein said, that God doesn't concern himself with man. We're not worth it. But the Navi says no. Yes.
The proof of Torah Sinai seems very logical and simple, but it just, if you go like in the scholarly world, it doesn't seem like, it just seems that nobody, you know, people are still atheists or they don't believe in God. So I was wondering if you like encountered what people's major, you know, opposition to the proof is and what your rebuttal of that is.
I can honestly say I never heard anybody that brought up a legitimate question.
Really?
About the proof, no. But what's their opposition to it? I know. Well, what do you hear?
I only tried explaining it to one person, but he said like that. There have been instances of mass conspiracies, like just like where people would, you know, like massive, like native people would believe an event that never happened.
Yeah, well, I did see, somebody sent me once something about it, that somebody tried to disprove it. But what did they say? I wish I had it still. But I'm sure I can get it again. But the disproof, and the disproof was really a proof, because they said that there were 200,000 Christians that saw an apparition of Mary, and how could that be the same argument, you know? So you see that things like that could happen. So, but then in the same essay said, but the apparition was due to a certain way the light hit the window or something like that. So that shows that they weren't crazy. It has to be explained. You know, but you don't have 200,000 people just saying that there's something when there's nothing there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be explained. So that proves on the contrary, that the supports the proof. Not unless you can explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest opposition I've heard people is that it's like you're using the Torah to prove itself, because how do we know there's 2 million people there? They say like, oh, you've seen the Torah, there's 2 million, there's 16,000.
Right. Well, the proof of the same question on history. How are you using history to prove history? And the answer to that question is that no one can come up with something in midstream and say it was of such proportion that everybody in the world knew about it.
But they like respond with like, well, it's not written in like your history book, like in your school history book.
So who knows? And then the problem is, how do you know George Washington exists? It's just in your school history book. So then how do you know that George Washington existed if it's just in your school history book?
No, I know, but they just want to know. They say, well, if it's true, if it really happened, then all historians wouldn't argue with it. Like, no one argues that George Washington existed.
No one argues with it. So no, no, why don't they argue with it?
Because everyone says he existed.
So how do they know? They're living now. They're not living in his time.
They don't know, but then they say,
there's physical proof.
What, do you find they found his body?
No, they have like where he lived, like his house.
How do you know it's his house? How do you know it's his house? They could have made it up, they say he lived here. Usually those things are not that sure about anyways. These are his shoes. Your shoes, but the answer is the same answer that I gave in the essay. And the answer is because you have to assume a mass conspiracy. And we don't assume such a thing. There's no motivation to have hundreds and thousands of people to say that there was a George Washington and make it up when it didn't exist. That's the real answer. And that's why we accept historical proof. And the same thing over here.
I guess what I'm asking is, like, why couldn't a guy write this book, you know, write a book and say 600,000 people saw me get out of the room, he has his kid, he tells his kid tells it, you know, it goes on and on.
It might go on and on, but it would be like Muhammad, that he had a vision in the cave, okay? So, but he couldn't say he had a vision in front of all of Arabia, to all of the Arabs. That he couldn't say.
Well, what if a guy said that?
Well, if a guy said that, so people would say, it can't be true, would have heard about it already.
Well, let's say he just told one person, he told his kid, and...
Whoever he told would be a fool to believe him, because they would say, how come nobody ever heard about it? People do that all the time. If you could do that, you could make a lot of money. You can just tell people these crazy things. But even Hitler and Machshimo, who would certainly want to do that, he couldn't do it. He couldn't say that he believed in some kind of providence, that whatever he believed in, that appointed him to be the Chancellor of Germany. So he couldn't say, he would, if he could do it, he would say it, that it was some miraculous thing in the sky that everybody saw it. That proved that I'm the special anointed one. I mean, he would certainly do it. He was Russia enough to do it. But people can't do things like that. And even Mohammed, who wanted to prove that he had the prophecy, he said it was in the cave. Can't argue that. And then they say his wife said this, his wife saw something. I mean, he always said, well, Yeshu, you know what I mean, the Christianity. So they say that what's their big proof? The big proof is in Matthew that he got up on the third day. He rose on the third day, that which was sort of Sunday. But they say, how do you know he rose? Because the grave was empty. So Matthew says, and the Jews said that somebody stole the body. Well, it's certainly a more logical explanation. But see, they can't do that. No one can do it. It's not possible to do that. Because people aren't fools. So you could have private miracles you could always have. All religions are private miracles. But you can't have public miracle you can't have. It's not possible. But, I mean, I don't find any real questions, and a lot of times if you look carefully at the questions they raise, they say, well, it happened here. You see, but in that question, they always bother about, well, why did it happen? You know, like, why did hundreds of thousands of people see this thing? So they have to come to some kind of explanation, which means that they don't believe mass conspiracy. People will not, if you accept mass conspiracy, you're in trouble. You know, like the thing I mentioned, If 20 people come off a train and say the train's on fire, you're going to pretty much believe them. I'm not going to say that this whole group, I mean, it's possible, but they say the whole group got together unless they're pranksters, but ordinarily, normal people, you're not going to deny what they say. Because it can't be that everyone has the same motive. And hundreds of thousands of people, it's not possible to deal with. But nevertheless, I find that proof is very not convincing to people. I don't know why, but it doesn't seem to move a person. But I think what moves a person is the pasuk that says that in a few places in Devarim, that Hayom Azeni Esalom, but Hashem Alakecha. So Rashi says, what do you mean Hayom Azeh? That every day it's B'chol Yom Yoyu Beinecha Kechadashos. That the Torah every day should appear to you, if you learn properly, like something new. There's a Schachus in Torah. There's a system in Torah. There's a science in Torah. It's a system that is equal to, none other is equal to it. In other words, it's a science in its own right. It's the only science that's not real science, and it nevertheless is a science. And the methods that we use in Torah are the same methods, or rather say, superior methods than scientists use. We were way ahead of science by thousands of years in realizing that the beauty of an idea is a determinant as to whether it's correct or not. And that only happened recently, with the Einsteinian Revolution, relatively recently. But we always had that. The Hamor Shavua, light of the Torah, the experiencing of the ideas and the beauty of the ideas, the method of uncovering ideas, and when you dig into the Torah and you uncover ideas, the beauty of the ideas. That's something I think which is the real conviction, because that's really like the bread and butter. That's something you're eating every day. You're consuming it every day, and you see the beauty in the ideas, and you see the chachma. That I think is the most convincing thing. I don't think there's any argument that is more convincing than experiencing the ideas and learning itself, and the chachma itself. And you can see it can't be a man-made thing. If you take the greatest minds that could spend their lives in it and still pursue new ideas and uncover new beautiful ideas and truths, that can't be a man-made thing, because there's no human mind that's capable of doing that. And if there were, there would be no reason for them to do it anyways. And the whole system, it's not really, doesn't cater to religious emotion. So you want, why would anybody make up the whole halachic system? And it's, which is a technical system. You know, what difference does it make if the tefillin are this way or the tefillin are that way? Or what difference does it make if the shechita is precisely the way it's halachically supposed to be, or it's not so precise? Religions don't make differences about things like that. And it's done in a scientific way with a formula. And the formula has beauty to it. Like the Dovah HaMelech says, that Zmiros Hayelich HaKecha. We say it every Shabbos. And Gam Avdecha Nizhar Bahem, they function to help us in our lives. And also, they're sweet and they're delicious in terms of the appreciation, intellectual appreciation, and there's a certain intellectual aesthetic to it. Those are the things I think that are more convincing to a person than the proof. The proof is a nice proof, but it's a proof that's, you know what I mean, it's not an experience of the person. But the experience of Torah Misinai, which takes place every day, that's really the most convincing thing about it. Nothing more convincing about it. All the categories that we have. Well, who would make up those categories? Tumas Atom and all these different categories that you have, and Tumah and Tara and Halacha and Tefillin and all these. The person have to be insane. What purpose is that? If you want to have a religious idea about God, so put on boxes. You want to go so far as put on boxes that have scrolls, okay. But to have so many halachah l'mash misinais and this and that, and every then and when you go into each one, you see there's an idea there, there's chachma, and usually it eventuates in Yedias Hashem, emphasizing Yedias Hashem, the Shin, Shakai, all these things. I mean, why would anybody do that? I mean, there's no motivation for a person to do that. No, it's not a religious activity, because religious wise, you say as long as your heart was in the right place and you intended to do this, then that should be enough for God. Satisfied God. But that if you had a detail that's wrong, that the tefillin, it's not the right place, the chsustas, or whether it's cloth, why should God care about that? What does that mean? So this whole system of a science within the religion, pure science, which is defined totally by Chachma, that is antithetical to religion. Because you see people get very upset whenever you change something. They don't like that. Because they want to have a certain assurity that this is the way it is, you know? So in the time of Chazal, when Chazal asked somebody to make a bracha, so if they made the bracha the regular way, they criticized them. They said, you say that, you're not teaching us anything. If you said it the other way, you would have learned something from it. Because they were open-minded people and they wanted to hear new things. But today, if you switch or change anything, maybe now it's a little better because there's so many different groups. But over here, people go crazy. You know? Like if you take out, for example, if the Ashkenazim would take out the Nisan HaTokef, boy, you go crazy, right? The Sfaradim don't have it. I mean, so what's so terrible about it? It's not a major work. That's part of Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, but emotionally it's such a powerful force that people will go crazy. It has a very strong religious value. So Bali Halacha, for a Bali Halacha, a person in the same Sanatega wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But for an average person, he missed the main Shemon Esrei. So you see that the religious instinct does not go in line with the halachic instinct. Halacha looks for authenticity, ideas, central ideas, scientific methodology. It's a different kind of a thing. So this whole system has to have a source, and the source of all science and knowledge, which is God. That's why it's the same methodology, same approach. And that's why it endorses Chachma. I know today there are people that say that science, that we should go away from science. But it can't be, because the Chazal say that when you see a scientist, you have to make a bracha. A Daisha scientist, you have to make a bracha. So we respect science, we respect that Chachma. No one denies that. So the whole system is geared towards Chachmas Hashem. That's the whole system. That's the essence of the system. Is there another system like that? No. There is no other system like that. It's a funny thing. There was a time when the Arabs were close to it. In the 9th century, 10th century, there were certain the Arabs around Muslim. Al-Farabi, there were certain very intellectual Arabs. But it seems that Muhammad was, I don't know whether it was him or people perceived him to be more open to his knowledge in Christianity. So I guess they, took up on it. It doesn't exist anymore. Okay, how long do you guys want to go? Is it next week? What?
Mm-hmm. I have one.
Yeah.
You just mentioned how the whole system is created through Chachma, through logical principles, even the smallest details. I understand why certain mitzvahs like kashrus, we see the benefit for man and how it helps man. But the details, yes, there are principles guiding what the halacha should be, but it seems like it could go when they're machlokas, and it seems like it could go either way.
Could go either way, right.
So why is it a benefit for man to adhere to the technical aspects of halacha? What is it doing for man? It seems like if it could go either way, it's not directly helping man, it's just it's what halacha is, or why is that a benefit?
It doesn't matter which way it goes. Right. That's a very good question. Very good question. Anybody want to answer it? You see, the thing is like this. In all religions, the greatest danger and what's most destructive is that religion gets into the hands of the masses, and then they try to mold it according to their own emotions. Then it's not long that a religion will become a vodazar. You see, all the superstitions, the things, and finally will become a vodazar. So, and our system is safeguarded because in the Torah, the one thing that is the worst thing is a vodazar. And then you have kishuf and superstitions, all these type of things, which are all part of the same things. Some are more serious, some are less serious. But the Torah's whole objective is to remove man from that type of thinking. So that's why the halachic performance must be a result of intellectual investigation and not a result of a person's whims. So that's what safeguards the halacha. So it's true, it doesn't matter whether it's done method A or method B, or A or B doesn't matter, but what matters is how you arrive at it. If you arrive at it through a chacham or through chachma, then it's valid. But if you arrive at it through tendentiousness, in other words, you just happen to prefer certain things and it feels good, then it's away from the whole derech Torah. That's the answer to your question. Very significant question. Very important question. That's why it has to be that way. So we're safeguarded from following our tendencies because we have to follow a system, a scientific system. And that's how only the Chachmei Yisroel can determine what the action is. It's true, it doesn't matter what the outcome is, as long as the outcome is an outcome that's based upon reason, because then you're serving God. But if it's not based on reason, it's just based on tendentiousness, their own feelings and emotions, then you're serving Vodazara. Or you're beginning to serve Vodazara. As I said, Al Tifnu El Ha'alivim. Don't turn to the Alivim. Mere turning is the beginning of Vodazara. And Chachma stands in opposition to that. So when we decide a question, we don't decide it. No tshuva was ever written where a person says, "And I feel this is right," without bringing Raya from Gemaras, from Rishonim, from sources, logical ones. Sometimes the outcome doesn't even feel right. Like there was much bickering and criticism because Rav Moshe came out with a psak that an artificial insemination, you should take the semen of a goy, not a Jew. So you shouldn't have the problem of achnose achoso. But many people went crazy about that. Emotionally, it didn't feel good, and I don't think that people follow it anymore. But they don't follow it. But I'm just showing you, because halacha is counterintuitive, so you can come out with a conclusion that goes completely against the intuition, or the normal intuition about it. Shabbos in every area, any area.
So what's bad about having your emotions take part in it? What's the avodah zara?
Once you try to worship God according to your emotions, you're setting your emotions up as the valid, authoritative source of how to serve God. That's not possible. You can only serve God through your mind. And that's avodah zara. What's so terrible if a person in New York City goes to Central Park and worships a tree? What's so terrible? The answer is it's just a product of his imagination. That's what avodah zara is about. That's what if you learn through. I think Yeshayahu Man, where he talks about how the person uses his intelligence in cutting down the tree, estimating the height of the tree, how to make the tree fall the right way, how to cut it up. Everything he uses logic. The last thing, he takes the tree and says that this is my God. That's where the total foolishness comes in. And most people, if you talk to them, sooner or later you'll get down to their foolishness. And it's foolish. I mean, you can see it's foolish. It's like I mentioned this morning. Like if a person is trying to get into a parking spot, and just so happens that somebody moves out right before them, they'll say, Menashe Shemayim, God got me a parking spot. But if another car zooms in before them, they won't say, Menashe Shemayim, God gave that person a parking spot. So you see that it doesn't follow reason. It's following a different course. That's not good. That's not acceptable in Yadis. Okay? Yes?
Why do we prioritize Gemara so much?
Okay. That's a good question. The reason why we prioritize Gemara so much is because in Gemara you really get the method of Torah Shebaal Peh. And once you have that method, then you can do anything. If you don't have that method, you can't do anything. I mean, if you learn Chumash and Rashi and you don't have the method of Torah Shebaal Peh, you really are not guaranteed. I mean, you can't approach it properly. So your outcome is maybe you'll get the right kind of outcome, maybe you won't. But you don't have any method of analysis.
You have similar questions that you have in Gemara, but you find contradictions or weird things in Torah Shebaksav. And so, what if it's can you get the same methodology from there?
No. There's one methodology that was given down from Sinai, how to analyze it, and that's the methodology of Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's that's what I mentioned before. Also, there's a beauty in it. Of course, it follows scientific, logical, rational thinking, and there's conceptual beauty to it. So that's why that's the whole thing. That's the essence of it. Al pia dvam ra'ayla karati etchod bris yas yisrael. According to the mouth of these things, Gemara says, "Why is al pia dvam ra'ayla darsh bapa?" Tosh Bachsav, we don't understand what Tosh Bachsav. And with Tosh Bachsav, I mean, we can make inroads and try to understand something. But without the method, you don't understand Tosh Bachsav. Yes?
People can analyze, though, without having learned Gemara. Like a lawyer can also analyze something.
Right, but you see, the application, you will not be able to apply his analytical ability in law to analyze Torah. You have to know how to analyze Torah. See, each science has its own orbit. So you can't just be good. You can be good at analysis, and it gives you a head start. If you know logics and reasoning, then it'll certainly give you a head start in Torah. But it won't tell you how to learn Taisvus. Because you have to know how the method, not just the method of thinking, but how to apply it. The application is also, because of the nature of the subject matter, you always have to know how to apply the thinking to the subject matter. So Torah Shel Peh is both. It's analytical, and it's also the specific application.
So when we're defining the structures of mitzvahs and stuff like that, and like specifically defining it in abstract and not going into the philosophy behind it, is there, besides the training of the mind, then what is the value in knowing like the structure of mitzvah, especially if we're not going to be posting?
The value is, there's a number of values. I don't know, maybe I speak about it Thursday. What's today? Wednesday?
Yeah.
Yeah, I speak about it tomorrow more. But the themes, the themes have ideas, and the ideas are extremely important. Mandeni chukecha. So the ideas are extremely important. So the themes have ideas. And also they teach you how to think. And also you see God's chachma, how he wove the halachic structure in a very beautiful manner.
Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate when you said the themes have ideas?
Well, okay, I'll elaborate more tomorrow. But the theme is that every mitzvah has a theme. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, Ner Chanukah and Ner Shabbos. Ner Shabbos, the theme is Shalom Bayis. Okay, it's a theme. Ner Chanukah, the theme is Pesum Yeniso. So each theme has a lot to think into. Okay. All right, we'll stop here. We'll continue to think. Very good questions, and I think it's a very important group.
Thank you.